Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Your community, your neighbors, your bank. At Farmers and Merchants Bank, we're more than just a place to keep your money. We're part of the family. From home loans to business accounts, we're here to help you grow. Farmers and Merchants Bank. Local, trusted. Right here with you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Ready?
It's good to have with us today a gentleman from this area, Mr. Charles Birchfield. Thank you for taking the time to come in and visit with us as we continue to interview our veterans on our program. Thank you for coming in. Okay. And I think we probably need to mention that you're Sally Doty's dad as well. So just, you know, give Sally a little political plug there. As you know, with the program that we're doing, we're interviewing our vets and saying thank you for what you've done for our country. You actually served in the Korean conflict. Is that correct, Mr. Birchfield?
Right.
Okay. Now, you've recently moved to Brookhaven. You've been in Brookhaven
4 years.
4 years now. So where were you when the Korean conflict actually started?
It was in Itala County.
Itala County, up in North Mississippi.
Right. Well, Central Mississippi.
Central Mississippi, excuse me. And you were in the Guard, I understand. Is that correct?
Well, I was drafted.
Oh, you got drafted. Okay.
I was drafted, and we went to Fort Chaffee for the introduction. And I don't know how I got in the tank. We took a series of tests, and some of them said you had to make a certain grade in the test to get in the tank unit, and I put in a tank unit. We were sent to Camp Polk for basic training.
Okay.
There was 26 of us from Mississippi.
Really? Okay. Now, Camp Polk was where you did your basic training?
Did our basic.
All right, when did you actually, where did you go to do your training in the into being part of a tank crew?
Well, we started in Camp Polk.
Oh, you did? Okay.
It was a tank unit.
Okay.
And, of course, they had just the basic background, I mean, people. Mm-hmm. And we had to do all, you might say, help. Well, actually, I helped with some of the training.
Okay. So what were you doing before you were drafted? What kind of work were you
doing? I was working with the State Highway Department.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
So gave me a break on the tank because the tank had drove about halfway between a truck and a bulldozer.
That's a good comparison. I've never thought about it like that. Well, now you're the first vet that we've had in here to interview that was actually a part of a tank crew, and I could see where it would take. You know, the infantry was important, but the tank commander and the tank crew, they had some pretty specialized tasks and training that they had to go through. And, you know, I've always thought if I was going to go in combat, I'd want to be in a tank because at least
That's
I
right.
couldn't get shot with a bullet. But there were all kinds of weapons that were out there that were designed to deal with tanks, and you were kind of a sitting duck, because you couldn't move very fast. What was the speed of the tanks that you were driving back then?
Well, the top speed on level ground and all was 35 miles an hour. But normally, in that kind of terrain, mm-hmm. 4 or 5, maybe 6 miles an hour.
Wow. And we see the things now with the new tanks that are out there, mm-hmm. the new high-tech tanks the Army and the service is using to drive at 50 and 55 miles an hour and 60 miles an hour. It's unbelievable. Can actually fire while they're moving and acquire targets.
Yeah.
It's pretty high tech compared to what you guys were using in Korea.
Well, we couldn't, because that tank is a direct fire, just like you're shooting a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be sitting still.
Sitting still, which made you a pretty good target, too.
Right.
All right, well, let's before we get into the actual application of what you were doing, you finished your training there at Fort Polk, and did they send you straight on to Korea at that time?
No, I went to Fort Knox to take some specialized training.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed up there 13, 14 weeks.
Now, I think Fort Knox is a training center for armored.
Right.
I've been to Fort Knox, big base, really nice.
That's right.
That's where they got all the money, too. Okay, so you were at Fort Knox about how long?
About 13 or 14 weeks.
Okay. And so after that?
After that, I had a delay in route. The division left Camp Polk and went to Japan.
okay,
for advanced training. And I had to lay in route and went then to Japan from Camp Polk.
Okay. Now you went over there, went to Japan from the States, I would imagine by ship.
Yes, sir.
A troop ship, did you actually have your tank assigned to you then, or did you get your tank when you got to Korea?
Well, we got our tanks assigned in Japan.
In Japan, okay.
We carried our tanks from Japan to Korea.
Okay, so the trip from the United States over to Japan, I would imagine a ship full of men was not probably a short trip.
It was approximately 18 to 20 days. I'm not too sure just exactly.
What'd y'all do for 18 to 20 days? Just sit around and look at each other?
Right. Well, some of us actually went up on the deck and played blackjack, and whoever won the blackjack had to buy ice cream for everybody.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So actually, you never did win anything. You just way of paying for ice cream.
Got some ice
killing
cream.
Time.
Neat. Yeah, and I imagine you had a lot of time those days. All right, so you're in Japan. You get your further advanced training, and then you're sent to Korea.
Sent to Korea.
All right, now, I've talked to several Korean veterans, and we've got to start by talking about the weather. The terrain is pretty rough. A lot of folks may not realize there's a lot of mountainous area. It's rocky, almost not really a desert, but a lot of rough area that would be a challenge for a tank to maneuver in. Were you guys assigned to that kind of location?
Yes, sir.
A lot of rough ground. What was the weather like there?
And the weather was cold.
That's an understatement.
That's right. The day we went up on the line was Christmas Day of 51. And it rained, sleeted, and snowed, and froze over. Everything froze that night.
Mm.
And the little old heater we're supposed to have had, it was a cold, put it on the ground, it dripped. You're using diesel fuel to burn to heat it.
Right.
And it wouldn't burn.
My goodness.
So it was that cold.
It was that cold. Now, I would think also, there's a lot of folks in our community, in our area, who love to, you know, dicker with tractors and backhoes and dozers. The weather had to create major issues for you guys in a tank. I mean, you had to, the maintenance on that tank, you had to be, I mean, your fuel, it was probably diesel, if I'm correct.
No, it was gas.
It was regular gas, okay. And, I mean, was it an air-cooled engine, or, I mean, did you have?
It was a regular conventional engine.
Okay. And you had a lot, was there a lot of maintenance involved because of the weather? A lot of preventative issues?
Well, you had done a lot of that before you went over there.
Okay.
And it had everything up to par. Then you just keep it up there.
Okay.
You check the oil, check the battery, check the water and everything. Took you about 30, 40 minutes before every day. It was an everyday job whether you were going to go out to do anything or not.
Just make sure, because if it needed operating right, it needed to be done. You didn't have time to do it if something happened. All right, now, how big a crew did your tank have, and what type of tank were you on?
I was on an M4 with an A3 gun, E8 recoil.
Mm-hmm.
It was five of us in the crew.
Five crew. Now, what positions were there in the tank?
There was a driver, the assistant driver, loader, and the gunner.
Okay, and then the
commander.
And then the tank commander. Now, I understand that after all the training and everything, they placed you, I'm sure because you scored so well and training came out so good, you were actually the tank commander in your crew.
Yes, I was commander practically the whole time through.
Now, just what did a tank commander do? Were you the guy that kept his head stuck out of the top of the tank looking around?
He's the target.
He's
the guy that stands up and looks around and makes sure everything is going, and if a certain targets, he picks them out and all.
Now, we were talking just briefly, and I've done a little reading and research about the role of the tank in Korea. Because of the terrain, a lot of it, sometimes there was tanks used for reconnaissance, but in most cases, the tanks were used in support of infantry. Is that correct?
That's right.
So when those guys went into battle, you were just supporting them.
Right. The people ahead of us had taken care of their armor for us.
Okay.
So we didn't have any armor to worry with. It's just...
You hoped.
Yeah, well, you know, that's right. We hoped, and we didn't. We were actually loaded with some armor-piercing ammunition. But
in other words, if you came in contact with enemy tanks or armored vehicles, you had the type of round that was necessary to deal with them.
Because, wow. See, there you have a personnel explode. Round, when it hits, it explodes and shrapnel goes everywhere.
Right.
And that's basically what we use most time backing up the infantry.
Okay.
They would...
Well, we're coming up...
Infantry go as far as they could go, and they'd stop and say, we need you to hit so-and-so.
Gotcha. Now, I've always... I've been around a few tanks and heard them run and this sort of thing, but I've never... quite been able to talk to anybody that could tell me what was it like inside the tank with that rascal running. Was it loud?
Not too loud. It had a semi-muffler back, and the exhaust went out the back.
And all of y'all wore headphones to communicate with one another.
Right.
Interesting. Well, we're visiting today with Mr. Charles Birchfield, Brookhaven resident, sharing his experiences in Korea as a tank commander. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes after this break. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have with us today Mr. Charles Birchfield, resident of Brookhaven, father of Sally Doty. And he's been very gracious to come in and share with us some of his experiences in Korea during the Korean conflict. And he was a tank commander. Very interesting. The first gentleman, first vet that we've had in that was actually in a tank crew. He's been sharing some stories. Now, there's so much about tanks a lot of people may not know. And one of the things that you were talking about, Mr. Birchfield, that was really interesting was the fact that tanks always worked in pairs.
Right.
Now, tell us a little bit about what the thinking was behind always having two tanks together.
Well, you always had to have two tanks close together, so... if the Chinese happened to push the infantry back to where they could get to your tank, they'd get on the tank and try to drop hand grenades in the engine compartment or any hatch they could get open.
Hmm.
So that way, we always had another tank close where we could, if they could fire on them and shoot them off.
So they could actually fire at your tank.
That's
because
right.
of the armament. They couldn't,
right.
didn't hurt anything or injure anybody, but you could keep the Chinese, which you said during your time, most of that's who you were fighting was the right. Chinese army. And as they would get on the tank trying to find a way to get a grenade into the tank, the other tank, your partner, your other one in the pair, would shoot them off of the tank or try to keep them off the tank.
They were using a 30 caliber machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a direct fire, too, just like the other. And so they...
And I think you said this happened to you several times. The Chinese overran the infantry, and before you guys could back out of there, you were overrun by the right. Chinese, and that's why having the tanks as pairs, you were able to protect one another.
Well, we never did think about backing out. You stayed there and
until the infantry could regroup.
Took command, let the infantry come back up.
Wow.
I
bet that got pretty hairy at times.
It did. And most time you get a tank in the area, the Chinese would leave. So that was one to our benefit.
To our advantage. Now, we were talking just a little bit. You were telling me a little story, an incident that happened to you where you were given an assignment that nobody else could accomplish to recover a tank that had kind of gotten slid off the road. You got to tell us that story about how that happened and how you guys were able to recover that tank.
Well, how it happened, I'm not sure. It was another platoon's tank. But anyway, it got off of the road and was sideways on a slope about 50 degrees. And, of course, you know, that's getting close to where it'll
roll over.
Roll over.
Right.
And the company commander sent some people out there to get it out and got two or three killed, some more wounded. And, of course, the Chinese were zeroed in on the area with mortar, but they use mortar most of the time on stuff like that. And company commander sent and got me, and sent me, I went over there and looked at it. It didn't seem like such a problem then. All you had to do was just hook a cable to the tank and pull it around to where it'd be looking uphill instead of sideways.
Right.
So we went out there and did that. And it was sort of a touch-and-go situation there for a few minutes. We did, you rev up any engine and they threw mortar in on you.
As they heard the engines, they would just shoot at the engines.
That's right. They wasn't in sight. See, the mortar, they'd shoot behind, from behind the hill. And they would, you rev the engine up while they fired mortar in the area. So I had mine to ease up there, idle, not rev the engine up, back up to where the cable would reach, hook the cable to it. And I told my boys, whenever I say go, the other tank driver had cranked his tank up and had it sitting there with it idle. I said, have them in gear, and let's, both of you, let's go up and get, pull it up straight off it. And did, and got the tank out.
My goodness. Well, quite a feat. That's amazing. And it's interesting that the company commander would come to you and ask you to volunteer for that task.
Well, he was sort of a new man on our old company commander. He got wounded and left. This man come in, he didn't know too much. And he said, well, he talked to some of them, and some of them said that if anybody did it, I could. And of course I did. It didn't create too much of a problem.
Just doing your job, doing it right. So you were in Korea for almost a year and a half. Is that roughly?
Well, I was in Korea from 19th day of December of 51 to September of 52.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't remember exact date when we left. It was somewhere around the middle of September.
Not quite a year. Okay. And most of that time you were up front supporting the infantry in your tank.
Right.
I certainly hope none of your crew was ever injured or anything during this time.
It wasn't. We never got anybody injured. The company and the whole company, we only lost two men, and tank, so one of them backed the tank off in a bomb crater that turned over.
Let me ask you this. What size gun did you tell me? I can't remember. What size was the main?
Main gun was a 75 millimeter.
Okay. That's a pretty good size round. How quick could you reload and fire? How many rounds?
Oh, about two rounds a minute.
Goodness.
Because, see, you had the loader that he was ready as soon as it recoiled and ejected the shell. Well, then he's ready to put you another round in.
Now, the going off, actually when you fired the round, I would imagine that made a little noise.
It did. It made a lot of noise.
And if you were firing a bunch of them, I would imagine your ears probably rang for a little while.
And the recoil was bad enough that a lot of times it would move the tank back a few inches.
My goodness. Okay. Wow. So you served almost a year in Korea as a tank commander,
right,
and saw an awful lot of combat, it sounds like, and supported the infantry. And after, I guess, that was just your tour of duty,
right,
you were shipped back to the States.
Right.
Did you stay in the service or in the Guard, or what did you end up doing then, Mr. Charles? You seen enough?
I'd seen enough. In fact, they offered me rating higher than what I had to join the Guard.
Really?
And I thanked them and told them, well,
no thank you.
No thanks.
The weather, we were talking earlier about how bad it was over there. Where did you guys, you didn't sleep in your tank. What did you, where did you sleep? Did you have tents that
tents.
You put up tents?
We had tents. And when we were up front, the tent was when you came back from maintenance and everything.
Okay.
When you were up front, you didn't sleep. Well, we had some bunkers.
Uh-huh.
And then at night, one crew would stay up on a guard and the other sleep.
How'd you get fuel? Because I know those things probably didn't get very many miles per gallon. Did trucks bring you fuel, or did you have to go back and
we
get fuel?
We had to go back and get fuel.
And get fuel. I was supposed to say
they were
dangerous.
I want to say 80 gallons of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Got about 4 miles a gallon.
Goodness.
It's,
goodness gracious.
So, you know, you were limited as the distance that you went.
Wow. What about your food? You get a lot of square meals, a lot of hot meals, or in you probably didn't get K rations? Or
it depended on where you was at.
I got you.
I was at one place and got one hot meal a day.
Okay.
And the rest of the time you had K rations and all. But
and you're glad to get that?
Yes, sir.
What unit were you in while you were in Korea?
I was in the 179th Infantry Tank.
Infantry Tank Division.
Right.
Interesting. Mr. Charles, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time and making the effort to come in today. And as we've been doing, this is all about the celebration of our 10th anniversary for the Military Museum that we've got here in Brookhaven. And we've been interviewing a vet every week, and we're going to up till November the 11th. And it has been such an honor treat for me to sit down and hear you guys tell these stories. But I have got to say, as I say to all of them, Mr. Charles, thank you for your service to your country. Thank you for your willingness to do the job that you were asked to do and doing it as well as you did. So, again, on behalf of a grateful nation, thank you, Mr. Birchfield, for what you did in Korea.
Well, we think we did a good job. If it had left us alone another 2 more months, we wouldn't have the problem we got
now. Wouldn't have the problem there now. Mm. They don't always listen to the military a lot of times. Well, it has been a treat for me to have you, Mr. Charles, and we're honored that you're a part of our Brookhaven family and community now. And we're glad Miss Sally's down here, and we're going to keep her in the fight.
Good.
So we are again. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.